Hi, I'm Gary Bauman from Check In Asia. This week, Hannah Pearson and I both gave presentations at the ASEAN Tourism Research Association's annual forum. This is the first presentation by Hannah called ASEAN Tourism, Where Do We Stand Now and How Might Countries Reopen? My presentation will be published later in the week.
Thank you very much, Jenny. So let me just share my screen with you guys and we'll take it away. So this afternoon, I'm going to be talking about where we are right now in ASEAN tourism, and how are countries, well, how have they tried to reopen, and how are they planning to reopen right now? So the situation right now is pretty bleak in Southeast Asia. You know, as Professor Nithya was saying, you're pretty much limited to domestic tourism. International borders have been closed for going on for a year for the majority of countries within Southeast Asia, and therefore there have been extremely limited opportunities for revenue for outbound tourism players, for inbound tourism players too. So every week I put together a report tracking the impact of COVID-19 on the Southeast Asian tourism industry, and every week I update this chart. And it's hopefully a snapshot. You can get a feeling for what the lockdown statuses are in Southeast Asia right now, whether inbound travel is permitted, whether outbound travel is permitted, and the number of cases. And you can see pretty much most of the countries right now are in orange. So that means in all of them, to some degree or other, there's some kind of partial lockdown. Most countries are not accepting inbound travel except, you know, for very special circumstances. Perhaps it's arranged travel corridors, perhaps it's official travel only. And for outbound travel, there are two countries, the Philippines and Indonesia, where outbound leisure travel is permitted, but they still have to undergo a quarantine upon their return. So it is not an open free-for-all. And I thought it would be kind of interesting, as I've been doing this for over a year now, to see how is that different to where we were 1 year ago. And it's actually not very different. There has not been a huge amount of progress. You can see here that this was one week ahead of where we are last year. Again, there were partial lockdowns throughout the country. Some countries were still in a hard lockdown. Others had not quite got there yet. But we're in pretty much the same situation. I think one of the differences, of course, is the number of cases. You can see here is relatively low. And Southeast Asian numbers remained pretty low until perhaps even the second half of last year, and then they started to increase. But as Professor Nithya said, Southeast Asia has handled COVID-19 really very well. Cases have remained low compared to other areas of the world, and death rate has certainly remained a lot lower than other countries. Looking at domestic travel, which, as I was saying, that's all we're limited to. Even for domestic travel right now, as we stand, there are still many countries that are not entirely open for domestic travel. Now, some opened and then they closed again. You've got countries like Malaysia, where interstate travel is still not fully permitted. You have countries, I mean, it was for a period and then it reclosed after a spike in cases. But you have countries like the Philippines, where since March last year, some provinces have closed completely to one another and have still not fully reopened to domestic tourists this whole year. This whole year, some areas have been completely closed off to domestic tourists only. And if they do accept them, they might impose a quarantine, they might impose testing restrictions. So it is extremely limited. This is a zoom in on what happened in terms of 2020 international arrivals to Southeast Asia last year. And Professor Nithya showed the kind of the world and said one of the worst hit regions was APAC. Southeast Asia was really pretty badly hit. You can see Thailand's numbers dropped from almost 40 million to 6.7 million. Singapore, almost 20 million to less than 3 million. And the majority of these arrivals actually happened in the first quarter of last year. So after that, you're talking maybe a few hundred, a few thousand arrivals only, and that's not enough to sustain the industry. So how has ASEAN tried to reopen borders since the pandemic hit last year? And they have tried. They've tried different ways. So Thailand, and this is, it's called the Special Tourist Visa, and this is something that they launched a while back, beginning of October, and it was something they had talked about for months and months before that. It was called the Phuket model, and then they changed it to Special Tourist Visa. And this was launched with really a great fanfare, and I think an expectation that it would kind of revolutionized the inbound tourism industry. And of course, what happened is that it didn't. So it was extremely limited. So it's only for low risk countries. Tourists still have to undergo a 14-day quarantine. And these quarantines are not cheap, the hotels that are being offered. You need really, really good health insurance coverage, which is sometimes an issue, especially if you're old as well. It's costly. And the process for application was pretty complicated too. So in fact, when it launched, between launching in October and as of the 13th of February, they only had 8,150 arrivals. And these were not arrivals only on this special tourist visa. These were arrivals for perhaps other kinds of visas too. So it's incredibly limited, very far from what they, I think, had initially hoped. But it was a test case. You know, it was that test case that trying to open. And I think one of the issues that Thailand has always faced is that there is a lot of resistance from locals to the opening of borders. So, you know, when the government was proposing this, there were lots of surveys out that showed a very high percentage of Thai people didn't want the borders to reopen. And we look at Singapore, and Singapore, out of all the countries in Southeast Asia, I think has done the stellar job of really trying to reopen. And for them, it's different. The stakes are really high. Of course, for Thailand, their GDP is very much reliant on tourism. But for Singapore, it's a hub, it's a city state, its kind of value, its business proposition, if you like, to the world is being a hub, is being connected to other countries throughout the world. And if you take that away, you know, if you let Singapore Airlines fail or Changi Airport, you know, suddenly has less air connections, then Singapore becomes a lot less of an attractive proposition. So it's really been in Singapore's best interest, and the government have really stated this, to protect Changi's status as an air hub, to try and reopen Singapore, but of course to do it in this kind of calibrated way. So they have set up a ton of different types of travel agreements. And so you have everything from reciprocal green lanes, so these are normally limited for business travel and official travel. And right now they're open with Brunei and China. They did have it with Germany, Indonesia, Japan, Malaysia and South Korea, but those have all been subsequently suspended, either because the other country closed the borders or because the cases increased. With Malaysia, which is obviously a really key market to open up to, there are a lot of workers traveling between the two countries, and they have this periodic commuting arrangement. But again, that's very limited in terms of the numbers that people are allowed to travel a month anyhow. And interestingly, they went for this unilaterally opening idea of this air travel pass. So essentially the air travel pass allows people who have been in Brunei, China, Australia, Taiwan and New Zealand to enter Singapore without having to serve what they call a stay home notice. So essentially a quarantine. But the kind of fly in the ointment for Singapore here is those countries don't allow outbound travel from Singapore. So in theory, Singaporeans could travel outbound to these countries and they won't have to quarantine on their way back. But in practicality, these countries don't accept inbound travelers. So in a way, it's almost a symbolic kind of gesture that, yes, we are open to you when you're ready. And you can see that in general, all of these travel agreements that they have not really had a big, big impact on their arrival numbers. So their January 2021 arrivals were just over 23,000. This is not something to shout home about. -98.6%. That's a massive decline year on year. Singapore, like Professor Nithya said, has also tried to do this Hong Kong air travel bubble. So this was the first kind of leisure travel bubble that was being proposed. And it was meant to open on the 22nd of November. It was cancelled the day before. It was going to be limited to 200 travellers in each way. They'd have to have tests before they arrived and on arrival both times. And it was really popular. Flights for these initial flights was selling out. But of course, you know, it shows that volatility. And yes, perhaps the world wasn't quite ready and cases were too volatile to be able to establish it. Now, it looks like it might be back on the table again, but Hong Kong's cases are starting to increase again. So it's a very kind of uncertain atmosphere, and particularly for the travel industry, trying to negotiate that and navigate that too, you know, booking passages onto flights and then having to rebook them and get cancellation fees is very tricky. So those are some of the things that are in place right now. But what's next? What is ASEAN planning? How is it planning to reopen? So we've got a few schemes, and a lot of these actually are coming out from Thailand, and Thailand always has a bunch of different ideas about how to reopen. They don't always come into fruition, but they have plenty of ideas. So this is one of the current hot ideas that they have, which is an area hotel quarantine. And I've labelled this kind of medium potential because I think it could change the game somewhat. Like right now, travellers have to go in 14 days, you have to spend in your room, and that's it. They have a golf quarantine, but they've had just one group arrive on that, so it's not really had significant interest. But they're saying that this could happen between April and May, could be piloted in kind of key tourist destinations in Thailand. And the difference here is that travellers would have to self-isolate in their room, but just the first 3 days. Then they will be tested, and if the test was negative, they could then go around the hotel area, use the facilities, use the resort facilities for the rest of their stay. And that would be then operated by 29 travel agents and the Tourism Authority of Thailand, the TAT. Now, this could be a game changer because, you know, a lot of long-haul travellers, when they do travel to Thailand, a lot tend to stay in the resort. It's a lot easier, I think, to sell this idea of you can use the resort facilities rather than you have to stay in your room for 14 days, right? That's a tough sell. So I think if it is introduced, something could start to change here. An idea coming out from Singapore, and you can see that the two main players here are really Singapore and Thailand with all of these ideas. So Singapore has had this Connect at Singapore idea, and this is basically allowing business travellers from anywhere in the world, except South Africa and the UK, to fly in, and it's almost kind of like you don't really go into Singapore, you're in a bubble, you're bubble wrapped. You go to a special dedicated facility, you're not allowed to leave that, so you can't really go into Singapore at all. And you could meet your business partners. And this is a picture of one of the meeting rooms, and you can see it has like a plexiglass between you, and it has a special hatch where you can put your documents so that they get sterilized before the other person signs and so on. So it's really high tech, but it's pretty expensive. You are not going to attract that many travelers who really want to subject themselves to this, go through the cost of it. You have to undergo quite a number of RT-PCR tests whilst you're there too. And you don't really get to go out into Singapore. So for Singapore itself, I think the economic benefit, yes, maybe there are deals being made, but is relatively low. It's not really helping the tourism industry, the tourism ecosystem at large, because they're all just staying inside this connected Singapore hub. We had the ASEAN travel corridor, the idea of this, and I've put potential low just because I see the potential of this coming off as being pretty low. I mean, this is something that has been talked about, I think, since June last year, and it's the idea of allowing business travel and official travellers to freely travel throughout ASEAN. Indonesia is currently leading that task force, but right now, you've seen all of the ASEAN countries are at such different levels of how they are handling the virus, are at such different levels of lockdown, of travel restrictions, that I think finding a common framework amongst them all is going to be very difficult work indeed. Another idea that has come out from Thailand, and again, I think this has got quite a bit of potential, is reducing quarantine. And this is all thanks to vaccinations. So they are looking at reducing the quarantine period for vaccinated travellers from 14 days till 7 days, and non-vaccinated travellers from 14 days to 10 days, looking potentially at starting in April. And if you combined this with this idea of this hotel area hotel quarantine, then it becomes pretty attractive again. So, okay, maybe if you're vaccinated, you can stay and you have to stay in your room for 1 or 2 days, and then for the rest of the 7 days, you can use the hotel facilities. Yeah, things start to become a little bit more enticing. It starts to become a little bit easier to travel to Thailand. But again, these are all ideas, and they're actually meant to be discussed or approved tomorrow. So we will know, tomorrow's the D-Day, basically. We will know how Thailand is planning to reopen, and the tourism industry can finally get some clarity. Indonesia has been touting this kind of COVID-free corridor, which is the idea of pretty similar to area hotel quarantine or other things, is allowing vaccinated travellers into the country, don't really have to quarantine, and designating certain areas within Bali as green zones. It has been put a little bit, it's a bit unclear now because the health minister waded in last week with different timelines. So what timeline this is working on no idea right now. Potential source markets could be China, could be Singapore, could be specific Australian cities like Perth. But Indonesia are really prioritizing the vaccination for their tourism workers in these green zones. So there is something definitely at work, but more shape, I think, needs to take place around it so that, again, the tourism industry can have clarity about what's going on. But if it came off, you know, it could have really high potential. And one of the last ideas, again, from Thailand, and it's another variation on some of these other things, is this sandbox idea. They've renamed it Sandbox, Andaman Sandbox. And this is the idea of vaccinated travelers being able to enter the country with no quarantine, but only to certain areas. So Phuket would probably be the first place it would be piloted. But the caveat is that the population need to be 70% vaccinated first. Vaccination rollout is pretty slow in Thailand so far. Even if they prioritize some of those areas, the main vaccination drive is not meant to really kick off until June. So whether things could be in place by July is a big question mark. But again, this could be really lucrative, opening up certain markets, certain areas, could certainly have a high potential to open up the country. And this is, I think, very, very similar to how Professor Nithya ended his. But really, I think for ASEAN to reopen across the region, you need this harmonized testing. You need quarantine protocols to also be harmonized. And then things can finally start to reopen. And without that recognition, that mutual recognition of perhaps each other's vaccination passports or testing or quarantine protocols, things are going to be very messy. But we are, you know, I think the positive news last week was all starting to come in. Countries are finally starting to change their opinion about reopening. And they have been very hesitant, I think, the last year or so, particularly if you compare them to Europe. But they are starting to make those small steps. And I think vaccination is making a difference. And I think in the coming months, we will see more developments that hopefully give everybody a lot more clarity about timelines that are going on.